ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we're reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 8, entitled The Churning of the Milk Ocean, Text number 2. Please repeat after me. Tam Agni Hotrim Rishayo Tamagni Hotrim Rishayo Jagrihur Brahma Vadinaha Jagrihur Brahma Vadinaha Yagnasya Deva Yanasya Yagnasya Deva Yanasya Medyaya Havishye Nripa Medyaya Havishye Nripa Tamagni Hotrim Rishayo Jagrihur Brahmavadinaha Yagnasya Devayanasya Medyaya Havishye Nripa Tamagni Hotrim Rishayo Jagrihur Brahmavadinaha Yagnasya Devayanasya Medyaya Havishye Nripa Others?
Tamagni Hatrim Rishayo Jagrihur Brahmavadinaha
Tam Agni Hotrim Rishayo Jagrihur Brahmavadinaha Yagnasya Devayanasya Vidyaya Havishye Nripa
Jessica,
no.
What together?
Tamagni Hotrim Rishayo
Okay, so maybe a little bit.
Yagnasya
maybe a little bit less water. These are not in Indian cups, I've got the curl on them, you know. Okay. There's a little spill all over me. What was it? Repeat, Mataji.
Again?
No. What was the last line you just did? Okay, please repeat after me. Tam that cow.
Agnihotrim.
Absolutely necessary for production of yogurt, milk, and ghee to offer as oblations in the fire. Rishaya, sages who perform such sacrifices. Jagrihu, took in charge. Brahmavadinaha, because such sages know the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Yagnasya, of sacrifice. Devayanasya, which fulfills a desire to be elevated to the higher planetary systems and to Brahmaloka. Medyaya, fit for offering oblations. Havishye, for the sake of pure clarified butter. Nripa, O King. Please repeat after me. Translation by Prabhupada. O King Parikshit.
O King Parikshit.
Great sages.
Great sages.
Well, actually, I'll just read the purport. I'll just read the translation, but then we can repeat. O King Parikshit, great sages who were completely aware that the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies took charge of that Surabhi cow, which produced all the yogurt, milk, and ghee absolutely necessary for offering oblations into the fire. They did this just for the sake of pure ghee, which they wanted for the performance of sacrifices to elevate themselves to the higher planetary systems up to Brahmaloka. Now, please repeat after me. O King Parikshit,
O King Parikshit,
great sages, who were completely aware
of the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies,
took charge of that Surabhi cow, which produced all of the yogurt,
milk and ghee,
absolutely necessary
for offering
oblations
into the fire.
They did this just for the sake
of pure ghee,
which they wanted
for the performance of sacrifices
to elevate themselves
to the higher planetary systems
up to Brahmaloka. Surabhi cows are generally found in the Vaikuntha planets, as described in the Brahma Samhita. Lord Krishna on his planet Goloka Vrindavan engages in tending the Surabhi cows. Surabhi abhipalayantam. These cows are the Lord's pet animals. From the Surabhi cows, one can take as much milk as one needs, and one may milk these cows as many times as he desires. In other words, the Surabhi cows can yield milk unlimitedly. Milk is necessary for the performance of yajna. Sages know how to use milk to elevate human society to the perfection of life. Since cow protection is recommended everywhere in the Shastras, the Brahmavadis took charge of the Surabhi cows, in which the demons were not very interested. Omagyana timarandasya genanjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisance unto him. Okay, somebody has to, I don't see a You'll have to tell me. Give me one of those. What time is it now?
5 to 8.
Okay. So, the Vedas are Vedic literature is divided into three broad categories. There's the Karmakanda, the Jnanakanda, and the Upasana Kanda. Okay. So here we're seeing people who are very much interested in the Karma Kanda, doing the ritualistic ceremonies. Also, we can see that in the Shastras, in the traditions which are available, there are three groups who are interested in doing ritualistic ceremonies. Those would be the Vaikanasas, the Pancharatrikas, and the Karmakandis, followers of the Karma Mimamsa. So the Vaikanasas, Vaikanasas and Pancharatrikas, they're both Vaishnavas. The difference between them is the Vaikanasas are by birth, by jati. They're Vaishnavas by birth. They are the, everybody's heard of Tirupati? So Tirupati is run by Vaikanasas. They're all Vaishnavas. But they used to be a lot of antipathy between the Vaikanas groups and the Pancharatriks. So we are, all Vaishnavas follow Pancharatra. But the Pancharatrik rituals are meant, both the Vaikanasa and the Pancharatra, the rituals, all the sacrifices are meant for elevation to Vaikuntha. Right? And Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur, he's categorized the four Vaishnava Sampradayas into those which have predominance of Pancharatra and those which are predominantly Bhagavat. So for example, the Sri Sampradaya is basically a Pancharatric Sampradaya. Though it's, you could say it's 70% Pancharatra, 30% Bhagavat. Whereas the Madhya Sampradaya, which we belong to, is predominantly a Bhagavat Sampradaya. Though we still take, you could say 70-30, 70% Bhagavat, 30% Pancharatra, because we're engaged in deity worship. This is like, and the other two sampradayas, I can't remember which one is which. I think that the Rudra Sampradaya is Pancharatric, and the Kumara Sampradaya is Bhagavat. But don't quote me on that. I just can't remember exactly which one it is. So their goal is the Pancharatric Sampradaya. The goal is, and the Vaikanasa is to, all these ritualistic ceremonies are to lead us to Vaikuntha. All of them are very elaborate. They perform very elaborate fire sacrifices. If you want to have some fire sacrifice done, an Agnihotra, then you get a Sri Vaishnav to perform it, because they're very expert in Pancharatra. But if you want to have kirtan, you get the Hare Krishnas to do it. Because they're expert. Each one is expert in the other, we may do some yajnas, but that's their expertise. And they may do kirtan, but that's our expertise. Now, in here, in this group, they're talking about these Brahmavadis. They were simply interested in going to Svarga, into the upper planetary regions, up to Brahmaloka. They were not interested in going to Vaikuntha, or going, with the speaker, of going to Ayodhya Dham, or Mathura Dham, or Goloka, Vrindavan. There's not their interest. They were just wanting to go to Svarga. So this is the realm of the Karmakandis, specifically the Mimamsa, the Karma Mimamsika. So Karma Mimamsa is one of the six darshans, the Shad darshans, which are found by followers of the Vedas. That would be Yoga, that's which was founded by Patanjali, and Nyaya by Gautama, Sankhya by the atheist Kapila. How many we got there? Yoga, Nyaya, Sankhya, then Vaisheshika, which is by Kanada Rishi. Then there is Purva Mimamsa, which is by Jaimini. And Uttara Mimamsa, by Vyasadeva. Now, Jaimini Rishi, he was actually a disciple of Vyasadeva, who gave him the Samaveda. He divided all the different knowledge between all his different disciples. So he gave Jaimini the Samaveda, and then Jaimini developed this Karma Mimamsa philosophy. The word Mimamsa means investigation, to investigate. And the whole idea of Mimamsa would be equivalent in Western academics to the concept of hermeneutics, the proper way of analysis, of how to analyze the shastras so that you get the proper meaning of it. Get the proper meaning of what the author meant, in this case the Vedas. Right? So there's a certain rules that you follow so that you don't make a mistake in how you understand. So this Karma Mimamsa, he wrote the Jaimini Sutras on the Dharma Shastras. In the Uttara Mimamsa, the first shloka is, what is it? Atato Brahma Jignasa. The first sutra of the Vedanta Sutra. The Uttara Mimamsa is another word for the Vedanta Sutras, the Brahma Sutras, Sharika Sutras. It's the same. So the first verse of that, the first sutra is Atato Brahma Jignasa. But in the Jaimini Sutras, the Karma Mimamsa, the first sutra is Atato Dharma Jignasa. Dharma. They're interested only in Dharma in regards to the Karma Kanda, how to advance to Swarga, how to do all the rituals properly so that you get the result of going to Swarga. They don't deny moksha, but they have no interest in moksha. They're only interested in attaining Swarga. And even though they have to repeat it, life after life, you go to Swarga. There's one instance in the Mahabharata of Mudgala Rishi. He was a very austere Brahmin, very enlightened. He only practiced uncha, which was he'd just go into the fields and pick up whatever grains somebody else didn't pick. He just collect that, and he would live that way, and he was very self-satisfied. And Durvasa Rishi tried to test him so many times, and Durvasa Rishi is described as a bit of a maniac. Externally, he appears to be like a maniac. He's very angry and this, and but if he's doing it just to test you, so he tested this sage, and he passed the test. And at that very moment, the Swarga Vimana came to pick up Mudgala Rishi, saying, "You have attained the right to go to Swarga." But then Mudgala Rishi said to the driver of the Vimana, says, "You tell me, what are the benefits of Swarga and what are the defects of Swarga?" And the driver was a little bit, says, "Well, you're acting, this is very foolish what you ask. You already attained the right to go there. Now you're asking about the defects?" Anyway, so he went on to explain all the benefits of Swarga, how it's such a beautiful place, there's such pleasure gardens are there, all the different, how your the bodily functions, you don't have to pass stool or urine, there's no sweating, no dust, all the different benefits, always cool breezes, everything is delightful, etc., etc. But the defect is, the defects are that you, while you're there, you cannot perform any tapasya. You cannot perform any austerities. Therefore, you wear out. Whatever you did before gets worn out. And after you've experienced such delights, knowing that you're going to fall is very disturbing to the consciousness. And when you see, just before you have to leave by Swarga, you see that your garland fades and you become struck with terror. These, I think, or the defects of Svarga. Some of Gala Rishis thought, he thought for a while and he said, oh, you can go now. I don't want to go with you. You can go. You're free to go now. And then said, no, you can come. What's the use of going to such a place? He says, you tell me that place by which going to, you'll have to suffer these things and you never return. So then the chariot, Swarga Duta, he said, he began to describe Vaikuntha, Lord Vishnu's abode, and from which going to you never return. So then he said, I'll just wait and then I'll go there. I'm not going to go to this place. What's the use of going there? So that's why, so this idea of the Kamna Mimamsika is of just wanting to rotate, but that's what they think, that you should just keep, you go and you come down, you just keep doing this. That's their ideal. They don't think that this is not a good idea. They think it actually is a good idea to keep doing this over and over and over again, because they ultimately, they don't, first of all, there's almost, you could say, essentially atheism. Because they don't think that the gods mentioned in the Vedas are real. They think they're only, the gods only exist because their names are mentioned in the mantras. It's the mantras which have got power. There are no gods. It's the mantra which has got power. So basically this atheistic. Jaimini Rishi was promoting this, but later he had, you could say he had a bit of a change of heart, and he stopped promoting this, and he of course his books were already written, and he became, you could say, more of a Bhagavata, and he wrote the Jaimini Bharat, Mahabharat, and he also is the one who recited to Parikshit Maharaj just before he left his body the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which is, as Srila Prabhupada, it was written by and commented on by Sanatana Goswami, and Srila Prabhupada explained that if you want to understand what it means to be a devotee, you have to read the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Please turn off your phone. So, in Bangalore, if somebody's phone is not turned off during a class, they're fined. If their phone rings, they have to pay a fine. So Jaimini Rishi had a, basically he went from being a Karma Mimamsaka to being a Mahabhagavat, his Brihat Bhagavatamrita, such a delightful, an essential work for any devotee. And also Krishna, in the pastime of the Indra Yagna, he also, to stop Maharaj Nanda from performing the Indra Yagna, he also spoke this Karma Mimamsa philosophy. That is not necessary. What is the point of worshipping Indra? Simply you do your Dharma and automatically you will get the result. No God is necessary. So Krishna was speaking atheism to, in order to convince Nanda Maharaj not to perform the yagna. And of course, he said, you should just worship Govardhan Hill. You're farmers. You know, the hill has got all the different grasses and streams and the cows have benefited there. So you should just worship Govardhan Hill. And of course, this led to a whole altercation with Lord Indra, who then got defeated because Krishna doesn't approve of demigod worship. Now the one thing though about this Karma Mimamsa, the Purva Mimamsa philosophy, is that though it has certain defects and as it has certain benefits, there's certain truths which are also found in it in the whole analysis. And as Vyasadeva writes in his Vedanta Sutra, and when he's arguing against other the other darshans, is that we agree with them, except in the parts where we disagree. You know, he's like that. So he would make statements like that. So he would attack certain parts of Sankhya, we would accept this part we don't accept. Certain parts of Vaisheshika we accept, this parts we don't accept. So similarly in the Mimamsa, because both of them are Mimamsa, both of them is very detailed analysis using logic, shastric analysis of the logical analysis of the shastra, not simply based upon logic itself, dry logic, which ultimately can lead to atheism, but it's logic applied to the scriptures. And one of the things that the Purvamimamsa was very successful in doing was that in this yuga, it became very prominent as a tool to defeat Buddhism and Jainism, because the Buddhists were saying that the Vedas are not real. The Vedas, we should not follow the Vedas. They're just whatever. They're just myths. They're not created by God like this. They're, you know. So the followers of the Vedic rituals, like students of Jaimini, one of the most prominent one was a man by the name of Kumarila Bhatta. So they founded, they went to great lengths to defeat Buddhism and to present that the Vedas are real, the Vedas are eternal, the Vedas are true, and they went to great lengths, and I cannot do justice before 8:30, on the whole Purvamimamsa darshan, but they went to great lengths. So Kumarila Bhatta, what he did is he disguised himself as a Buddhist, and he entered into one of the Buddhist universities, like in Nalanda or Takshashila. Takshashila was originally a Vedic university and became a Buddhist. Like, but specifically Nalanda was a Buddhist university. He disguised himself as a Buddhist, and he learned all the different branches, schools of Buddhist philosophy in order to defeat it. But sometimes when they would speak, you know, attack Vedas, he couldn't tolerate it, and he would cry. Tears would, even though he tried as hard as possible, tears would fall from his eyes. So one day when that happened, he got caught. They caught him. You know, why are you crying? You know, they found out he was actually followers of the ritualists of, because he was secretly, you know, when he was performing yajna secretly, when they couldn't see it. So when they found out that he was actually against them, they were going to kill him. They brought him to the top of the vihara, and they were going to throw him off. But he said, as he was falling, he said, "If the Vedas are real, I won't be hurt. I won't die." And he fell like 7 stories. He was hurt, except he became blinded in an eye. And the Buddhists were astonished that he survived, and he was astonished that he had an injury to himself. He said, "Why? Why have I been injured?" And Akashvani, a voice from the sky, said, "Because you said the word if." Because you said the word if. You had doubt. And that, you know, that, of course, that solidified his belief that the Vedas were true. So he had several disciples, and he was, you know, like this, he very strongly attacked. And this is what really brought down Buddhist doctrine, the Buddhist and Jains, because they were attacking the Vedas. So this Purvamimamsas, they were really attacking, and they were being very successful in decreasing the strength of the Buddhists. And he had several students. One of his main students was Prabhakar Mishra. And Prabhakar Mishra, one of his features was that he was always disagree with his teacher. Now, he was the shishya of Kumarila Bhatta, but he would always disagree with him. So one day, you know, Kumarila Bhatta pretended to be on the verge of death. So then there was a discussion amongst his disciples about what to do after he died. And so Prabhakar Mishra said, "Whatever Kumarila Bhatta said is true. I was just presenting the opposite viewpoint just so that the guru would defeat me and would show the real path." At which point Kumarila Bhatta got up and said, "I was just pretending to be dying. Now I'm glad that you have come around to my views." And then the disciple says, "I only agree with you after you died, not before you died." Like that. So Shankaracharya, he was, when he was on his Digvijaya, in Shankaracharya, it's mentioned in Shankaracharya, Digvijaya, he was wanted to debate with Kumarila Bhatta, because this doesn't happen now, but in those days, if you debated with somebody and you defeated them, then they would become your disciple. So Shankaracharya wanted to debate with Kumarila Bhatta because he had basically defeated all the Buddhists. He had defeated the Buddhists and Jains, and they was, you know, it was really coming down, the influence of Buddhism and Jainism. But at that time, when he went to meet Kumarila Bhatta, Kumarila Bhatta was like up to his knees in a fire made of rice husk. He was committing suicide by this slow burning to death. So Shankaracharya asked him, why are you doing this? Because of Guru Aparad. I pretended to be a disciple of the Buddhists, but actually I was just doing it to defeat them. So this is an offense to my teachers. So for Prayaschitta, I'm doing this. So in the meantime, so instead of, I can't debate with you because I'm in the middle of dying. So you should go and debate with my student, Mandana Mishra. He is my student, and you can debate with him. And if he defeats you, then you have to follow us. And if you defeat him, then he becomes your shishya. Like that. So Shankaracharya, he went and debated with Mandana Mishra. Srila Prabhupada also describes this, I think it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He describes this to a certain degree. So they were before they set up a debate, there was a discussion of what topic should be discussed, and they said they will not discuss Jyotish, because Jyotish is much too vast. Okay, 400,000 shlokas in Jyotish, they're not going to discuss Jyotish. So they began debating. And Shankaracharya was winning. But the referee was Mandana Mishra's wife. She was the referee because she was actually an incarnation. She was, because she's the shishya. She's learned. Contrary to popular belief, in Vedic culture, it's not like that the wife is just kept barefoot and pregnant. No, the wife is educated by the, because they get married at a young age. Marriage for the females is the, for the boys in the three higher varnas, their upanyayanam is done. The investiture with the sacred thread is done. The sacred thread is done at an early age, because that's how they enter into the Vedic civilization. So Brahmin boys around age, you know, 6 to 8, Kshatriya boys, you know, 8 to 10, and Vaishya boys, you know, 10 to 12. So what about the girls? Don't they? They also have to enter into Vedic civilization. So they get, for them, Manu says that marriage, vivaha samskara, is equivalent to upanyaya. Equivalent to getting the vestiture with the sacred thread. Because then, because at the time of marriage, a brahmachari only has three strands. At the time of marriage, he puts on a second thread for his wife. And it's described by Manu that whatever, it's like a brahmachari in the ashram, he has to perform certain agnihotras. He has to do different deeds. He has to clean the place, he has to, you know, all the different menial services that he does for his guru, plus do daily agnihotra. So so Manu says that for the wife, her cooking is equivalent to agnihotra. Any duties which she does is equivalent to anything a brahmachari does in the guru's ashram. Why? Because it is the grihastha ashram, and the husband is the guru and the wife is the main disciple. So that means she's being educated by the husband and his family. When we read in the life of Raghavendra Swami, if anybody's been to South India, Raghavendra Swami is a very highly well-known guru in the Madhva Sampradaya, considered to be an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. So in his Purva Ashram, as a grihastha, he was studying in Kumbakonam. So whatever he learned that day when he came home, while his wife was serving him dinner, he would teach her that day's lesson. He learned it, now she's learning it. So the point being is, the wife of a Brahmin should be learned, because she learned first from her father, whatever discussions were being going, and then the husband and his family educate the girl, because the boy gets married after he graduates. That means he's going to be significantly older, maybe 25, even 30. And the girl, she got married when she's 8. So by the time she leaves the home and comes to the husband's house, she's so that this way the husband is actually a guru, because he actually knows something like that. So therefore, the wife of Mandana Mishra was the referee. So after, you know, Shankaracharya defeated her husband, she said, okay, you've defeated on so many things. Now, we're going to discuss on Kama Shastra. Kama Shastra. So Shankaracharya said, well, I'm a sannyasi. I took sannyas when I was 8 years old. I can't discuss the subject right now, but you give me some time and I'll come back. So they took a little recess, a time out. So when he went out, and a king, because he didn't break any regular principles to find out about Kama Shastra. What he did is, a king had just, he went into meditation, into samadhi, and left his body and entered into the body of a king who had just died, and brought him back to life again. Came back to life, and the king had a harem. He had many wives. He had a whole, So he went there and he investigated Kama Shastra from a not just theoretical point of view, from a practical point of view, because he had numerous wives. He investigated and. But the ministers, the mantris of the king, could recognize there's something different about the king. He's much more intelligent. He's wiser than before. This something is different about this person. So they, being Brahmins, they could figure out that somebody else was in this body of this king. So they wanted him to stay, because this person was, such a king would be great for our kingdom. So they sent out soldiers everywhere. You look for any body, somebody who's in meditation, and kill him. That way he'll be trapped in the body of the king. So they were, they were sending out. In the meantime, Shankaracharya's disciples were guarding his body, because they didn't want something like that to happen. So just in time, he got out before they were going to destroy his body. He got out and went back into his sannyas body and went to rejoin the debate. And just by seeing him, Mandana Mishra's wife could understand he knew everything. So I said, okay. he has the knowledge that he didn't have before. So they surrendered, they gave up, and then so Mandana Mishra became one of the primary disciples of Shankaracharya. He also took sannyas. And they really, at that point, they really smashed Buddhism. India. That was the positive contribution of the Purva Mimamsa, that they were able to defend the Vedas. Like this, we sometimes hear this concept of that the author of the Vedas, who's the author of the Vedas? Yes. Huh? Yes. No, the Vedas. He's not the author of the Vedas. He organized the Vedas. Vyasadeva means the organizer. Who is the author of the Vedas?
Krishna
himself.
But we understand Brahma and then...
Have we never heard of the term Apurusheya? Yeah. The Vedas of Apurusheya. Means there's no author. Apurusheya. This is a concept from Mimamsa, of the Purva Mimamsa. Vyasadeva did not write the Vedas. The Vedas are eternal. He organized. He took the one Veda, divided it into four portions. In fact, we only have a small, tiny fragment of the Vedas. Because there are certain... The Vedas are divided into... the Shruti. The Shruti are divided into four portions. the Veda Samhita, the Brahma, the Brahmanas, the Aranyakas, and the Upanishads. So the Veda Samhita is actually the Vedic mantras. And the Brahmanas are the explanation of the Vedic mantras. So there are certain Brahmana texts which describe or explaining Vedic mantras which are no longer visible. We don't know what they are. They're giving an explanation. It's like having a commentary, but we don't know what the original text is. So there are many, it's like, you know, the Brahma Samhita is one chapter, is the fifth. The Brahma Samhita is only one chapter of what we have as the Brahma Samhita is one chapter of a book which was 100 chapters. We only have one chapter of it. So that we only see a very small portion of the Vedas. There used to be, I think, 1,000 shakhas of the Rig Veda. Now there's only a handful. There are many, all the different Vedas had many shakhas. Now they're reduced, and there'll be even, you know, by the next generation, who knows?
Persons
who are actually can recite the whole Veda. There are still some, but you know, you won't find many Dvivedis, what to speak of Trivedis or Chaturvedis. I know people who know like the whole Yajurveda, memorized the whole, you know, Raj Yajurveda, but you'll find very few. I also know men who've memorized the whole Samaveda or the whole Rig, but very few who've memorized both, what to speak of three Vedas or four Vedas. There are very, very few people who know the Atharva Veda. There's only two places in India where they know the Atharva Veda. That's one in Orisha and a place in Madhya Pradesh. Very few Atharva Vedis left. So these... So we only know a very small fraction of the... Just like in the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a one pastime which indicates that there are many... There's so much more of the Veda than we even know. That when Yajnavalkya, his guru, Vaishampayana, was wanted to do some austerities. So... The disciples say that they'll do it on his behalf, and Yajnavalkya said, "I'll do. I'm the better of the disciples, and I'll do it." So Vaishampayana was offended that my disciple is so puffed up. He thinks he's better than all the other disciples. He said, "You give me back everything that I taught you." So Yajnavalkya vomited up the Veda that he had, the Yajurveda he had learned from Vaishampayana, and all the other disciples, they turned into little partridges, Taittiriya, and they ate up all those mantras. And that then became known as the Taittiriya Samhita of the Krishna Yajurveda. So then Yajnavalkya, he did tapasya for a long time, and then Surya appeared to him in the form of a horse and said, "What do you want?" He says, "I want Vedic mantras that humans haven't heard yet before." So then from the mane of the horse came these mantras. That became the Vajrasaneya Samhita of the Shukla Yajurveda. The point being is that he's asking for mantras, Vedic mantras, that humans haven't heard before. There's so many Vedic mantras. Vast ocean of Vedic mantras. An infinite number of Vedic mantras. But we only see a small portion. It's like the sun. The sun is not always seen, but it's always in existence. So then he got that Shukla Yajurveda. And it's like now, Vedic mantras are disappearing. Even the mantra may be there, but we can't understand what it means because it's in Vaidika, not in Bhasha. There's a difference between Vaidic Sanskrit and classical Sanskrit. There are a couple of several commentaries on the Vedas, and they say we can't understand what the word means because it's Kali Yuga. So that was the contribution of the Purvamimamsas to show the eternality of the Vedas. Jaimini, and he makes one comment, but you often hear Srila Prabhupada makes the statement that Sanskrit is the mother of all language. We heard Srila Prabhupada say that. So Jaimini, I mean, when I read that, he says, all other languages are created from the mispronunciation of Sanskrit. Jaimini says that. I have the Jaimini sutras. So that so there's and these points are there. So their main mistake is thinking that Swarga is the highest destination. It's mentioned, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad, the flowery words, these the Veda Vataratis, the flowery words of the Vedas. They think this is all that there is. They don't know the real meaning of the Vedas. What is the real meaning of the Vedas? What is the real purpose of the Vedas? Sarvasya chaham hride sanivishtu matasmritir gyanam apovanam cha vedaischa sarvam aham eva vedyo vedantikrit vedavit eva chaham. I am situated in the heart of all the living entities. From me comes knowledge, forgetfulness and remembrance. By all the Vedas am I to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. So that is the purpose of the Vedas. Krishna is the purpose of the Vedas. Not going to Swarga, which, as Mudgala Rishi inquired, it only uses up your punya, and when you can't make any new punya, and then you just fall. It's like, you know, imagine if you had like billions of dollars and then you were reduced to food stamps. Do they have food stamps in Canada? Okay, what do they have? They have what do they have? It's like you have to live on welfare. You're going from being a billionaire to having to live on welfare. It would be a slight decrease in your lifestyle. It would be very disappointing. All your freedom, you know, so many, you know, it's not nice. That's why they become terrified. They become terrified. Their garland, which I don't have, wilts, and then they become completely, they go into shock. Then they die. They're terrified. So, it's getting, what time is it? I can't even. Okay, it's a black face with black hands. You can't read. What's the good of this? Any comments or questions?
You mentioned Pancharatri.
Yeah.
At least I don't know much. Can you just elaborate a little more? As I understand, Pancharatri refers to the way we do puja and all that. But
there's a
how it comes up.
How it comes up?
How it originated? There's a lot.
Pancharatri, how it originated? It's mentioned in the Chandogya Upanishad as the those who are ekantas, those who are fixed, one-pointed, how to be, you know, one-pointed in their worship, those are the followers of the Pancharatra, the ekantas. They're not interested in demigod worship or this or that. They're only worship focused on Krishna, on Vishnu. So that's the whole methodology of these ekantas. It's eternal. Pancharatra is eternal because it's part of the Vedas. And some people say actually, some scholars, some acharyas say actually Pancharatra came before the Vedas. But both Yamunacharya, you've heard of Yamunacharya? And Vedanta Deshika have written very elaborate commentaries proving the authenticity of the Pancharatra, because certain groups, Advaitas and others, Karmakandis, they attacked the Pancharatra, said it's not authentic. There are approximately 108 Pancharatras texts, such as the Narada Pancharatra, the Sattvas, there's the three main Tirthas, there's four main Tirthas in the Sri Sampradaya. Sri Rangam, Melkote, Tirupati, and Kanchi, Kanchipuram. So in Sri Rangam, they follow the Parameshwara Samhita. In the Melkote, they follow the Ishwara Samhita. And in Kanchi, I can't remember what it is, off the top of my head, I can't remember what it is. It might come to me. But these are the main Pancharatric texts that they follow. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he's the one who compiled all the literature, all the text for the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is a Pancharatrik text. Hari Bhakti Vilas is a Pancharatrik text. Brahma Samhita is a Pancharatrik text. Because in the introduction to the Brahma Samhita by Bhakti Siddhanta, he says Brahma Samhita is a Pancharatrik text. So the by the way, the word Pancharatra means it is explained over the course of 5 nights. Pancharatra. So it gives, for example, the main. Are you initiated, by the way? Are you initiated?
Yes.
Okay. So the Vaishnav Diksha which we get, that's a Pancharatrik Diksha. Even I suppose, in India, like in the Madhva Sampradaya or in the Sri Sampradaya and other Sampradayas, suppose a young boy, he gets Upanayana at around age 8. But he's not a Vaishnava. He's only been qualified to study the Vedas. In fact, the Smartas and the Advaitas and the Ganapatyas and all the different, plus the boys from Vaishnava families, they all go to the same Veda Pachala because they're just studying Veda, how to memorize the Veda. They're not studying philosophy. Afterwards, and then he's gotten his Upanayanam. Later, at whatever age, if they want to become Vaishnavas, they have to get Vaishnav Diksha, which is called Pancha Samskar, or in the Sri Vaishnav tradition called Shamashana. So, in other Vaishnav Sampradayas, the Pancha Samskar is done all at the same time. So the Pancha Samskar are Urva Pundra, this Tilak, Dasya Nam, the Tapan, the Yaga, and Mantra. So technically, so Bhakti Siddhanta, for his own reasons, he divided the 5 samskaras into 2. So 2 portions. The first initiation has got 3 of the samskaras, and the second initiation is the other 2 samskaras. So technically speaking, I know some devotees say, they only got first initiation, they don't think it's important to get second initiation. But unless you get second initiation, you're not initiated, you're not a Vaishnava. You haven't been initiated as a Vaishnava, actually. You have to get second initiation. That's not brahminical initiation. That's a misnomer. You're not a Brahmin by getting second initiation. Because we see traditionally they would already have Upanayana before this. Bhakti, somebody remind me to explain why Bhakti Siddhanta gave Upanayana after. So then, the whole idea of the Pancha Samskar is complete surrender to Vishnu, to Krishna. If you understand what the Pancha Samskar are, first is Urdhva Pundra. It means the footprint of Krishna on your head. If somebody steps on your head, that's if somebody were to step on your head, you're not going to allow anybody to step on your head. Somebody has to knock you down and then they step on your head. But if you surrender, like Bali Maharaj, and he let Krishna put his foot on his head, that means you're surrendered. So you have Krishna's footprint on your head. Then Dasya Nam. The word Dasya doesn't actually mean servant. It actually means slave. Hanuman once said, I'm not the servant of Ram. A servant, after he's done his duties, can do whatever he likes. I am the slave of Ram. I have no independence. So now you're named, the man who put his foot on your head, now you're named his slave. And then Tapan. We wear this. Or actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, see like this? The name of Krishna. So the other sampradayas, they take hot iron, hot brands, shankar chakra. They put them in the fire and they burn them onto your skin like a cow. You brand an animal. What does it mean if you brand an animal? What does that mean? It has an owner. It's owned by something. You see two dogs walk down the street, one without a collar and one with a collar. What does the one with the collar mean? He's got an owner. The other one's just a street dog. Like especially in India, there's many street dogs. But then you see one with a collar, oh, somebody owns that one. That means you have an owner. Right? You've got, and that means you're owned by somebody. Then, that's first initiation. Technically speaking, you're not supposed to, uninitiated devotees are not supposed to wear kantimala, and they're not supposed to wear tilak. But nobody follows that. But technically, because that's part of the initiation process. And then, yagya means you get the murti of the deity, of your master, and mantra. The mantra is required to worship. So that means surrender. You've got the footprint on your head, you've been branded as being owned by somebody, you have the name, slave of your master, you're given the master's murti to worship, and the mantras. That's surrender. That means you have surrendered your soul to God. That's pancha samskara, that you have surrendered your soul to God. Atmanivedanam. That's the meaning of it. So all the... There's a whole series of lectures. It's a 40-part seminar by Bhakti Vidyapurna Swami on the Pancharatrika Deepika, which is the deity worship book. I gave it to... what's that, the name of that Bhakta? What's his name?
Nick.
Bhakta Nick. I gave it to him. It's on his hard drive, so you can get a copy of it. But the example... Bhakti Vidyapurna gives an example of how what's a Bhagavat and what's the Pancharatrik part. So chanting the holy name is Bhagavat. Having a bead bag, having the counting that you should have, you know, they have start at the big bead and go around and don't cross it. That's Pancharatrik. That's the Pancharatrik. Yeah. How to do it, all the technical details of how to do it, that's Pancharatrik. That we chant the holy name, that's Bhagavat. That we have a bead bag which we should clean, that's Pancharatra Vidhi. You know, you're supposed to be between the eighth and ninth one, there's a little one representing the eight, these are the eight gopis, and when you go around you're not supposed to cross over. That's what we consider Pancharatra. These details of how to perform these things. Like you have to, there's a whole beginning of Pancharatra. You know, when you get up in the morning, what are you supposed to, which mantras are you supposed to chant? How are you supposed to take a bath, cold water? You know, when you pass stool, how you clean yourself? All these things, how to live. How to live so that you can become, all the details of how to live so that you can become fit for being in the association of Krishna. Right? Some big man, you just can't walk in, you know, and crash his party. You have to be invited because he only invites people who fit into his society. He's not going to invite the guy who collects the garbage because the guy won't know how to dress properly. He'll stink, you know. Like that. He's going to only people who fit into that society. So that means that's what Pancharatra is about. And that it's simple in any. Temple, but they have a vimana, right? At the top of the temple. Because it's that is the plane which will take us to the spiritual world. So the temple is like the airport lounge. You're just waiting for your flight back home. But if you don't do things properly, you'll be waiting in the airport for a long time. Yeah, your flight will be delayed. You'll be on standby for a long time. So you have to follow the pancha. Otherwise, because there is Seva Aparad. Seva Aparad can be there. There was an incident. Some of the devotees don't take it seriously. You know, there was one incident. It's described in the Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhav. Bhakti Siddhanta was. There was a little tornado, or some wind picked up some metal sheeting and it threw it against the top of the temple and it hit the arch over Ramanujacharya, because the four acharyas are there, Vishnu Swami, the Nimbarka Swami, Ramanuja, and Madhvacharya. So it hit the arch above Ramanuja. And he said, Ramanuja is the Pancharatrika Acharya. Something is wrong in the Pujari department. Go and investigate. So they did an investigation, and they found that the Pujari was in there writing love letters to some woman. And immediately he changed the whole thing. Only a brahmachari, like that could be worshipping. So this is, some aparad is there. So back in 19, to give a much more serious example of what happens when there's loose relationships, in 1982, in Mayapur, a large group of dacoits attacked the temple. And they stole the Radharani deity, the deity of Radharani. Because previously, the deities of Radha Krishna were not marble. They were Panchaloha. The same deities are in... they were all made... Three deities were made at the same time. One set is in... was in Mayapur. One is in Boston. Now, where's the third? I think the other ones are in San Francisco. Berkeley. So they all purchased at the same time. So those deities were made Panchaloha. So they thought she was made from gold. So they stole the deities. So I was studying in Bangalore, studying astrology. So I got a phone call from Shatadanya, who was a Swami then. So I said, can you, the deities, they attacked. I said, can you find out what happened? So I was just a student. I didn't know. I went to my teacher. He was a very expert in Prashna Shastra. And we did a whole investigation, and he said it was an inside job, and that they would come again after a certain length of time. And they did come again, when he said. And that's when Bhakti Raghava Swami lost his leg. They threw a bomb, and he lost one of his legs in that attack. But he said, the important thing he said, is that a woman is involved. And she wears white. And she has a yellow complexion. And she carries a pot in one hand and a spoon in the other hand. She's involved. And on such and such a date, I think he said September the 15th, 1982, you will find out more information why this happened. So this happened. This was in May. I sent this all off in May, and I never thought about it again. But then I went to Vrindavan for Kartik, and I was in the temple room, and then Pankajangari, he saw me and he came over. He said, you know what? On the day, within 24 hours of the date you told us, we caught the pujari who was taking care of the deities having sex with the cook who was cooking for the deities, and she is a widow, and she wears white, and a cook, they carry a pot. So everybody immediately clicked that this is why the whole thing happened. Because major seva aparad. Yeah, she's old enough, literally old enough to be his mother. She was in her 40s, he was about 20. And they, the main sevakas of the deity are having an illicit collection. And this led to, those dacoits attacked the temple twice. Several people were killed. Bhakti Raghava Swami lost his leg. The deity never was recovered. The deity was never recovered. They took her apart and melted her down to find out if she was gold. And they also stole the Shalagram Shilas because they believed that inside the Shalagram Shila there's gold. So they broke all the Shalagram Shilas. All because of Seva Aparad. We don't take it seriously. That's what happens when you have butter and fire mixing together. These things, biology takes over. Like in places like Guru Vayur, when the pujari goes from his home to do seva, he doesn't come back for 6 months. They don't want the pujari associating with his wife or to speak of some other woman. He's going to be doing this, at least depending on one, I think it's 6 months or 3 months. He's doing seva at the temple. He doesn't go back home. Because they don't want any aparads with in regards to the deity, because they know there's serious consequences. But we have a tendency in this kind to think that we are more advanced, despite so many scandals. And this is what happened. There's a reaction. So if we have any problems in ISKCON, this is one of the reasons. It may not be the only reason, but this is definitely a contributing factor. Seva aparadha, offending the deities by these type of activities. So, I don't know if I answered you, but Pancharatra is a whole, you know, how the things should be done. The details, so. That you, but you, if you want a lot more, it's a 40 part seminar by Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami. And most of it is, you don't even have to be, you know, you don't have to be worshipping on the altar. It's not just about deity worship, it's about everything. How to behave properly with the Lord so that you can enter into His association. Like I was saying earlier, He's mentioned, he gave out like a 1 hour talk about why you should knock on the door before entering into the pujari room. Because Krishna knows you're there already. He's a super soul in your heart. He knows you. Why should you knock on His door? He knows you're there. I mean, your hand is made from Krishna's energy. The door is made from Krishna's energy. You are part of Krishna. So why bother knocking on the door? You knock on the door because it's polite. Krishna is a person. If when He comes to your house, He'll knock on your door. He's not just going to walk in the, or walk through your door or whatever, appear on the other side of your door. He'll knock on the door. So how to behave properly, to treat Krishna as a person, you know, like that. So that's the some idea about Pancharatra. But to get the more, you see, it's a, like I said, 40-hour. It's a 40-part lecture, and each lecture is about an hour and a half long. So it's 60 hours worth. Okay, what can I say in a few minutes? What can I say in a few minutes? It's a whole lifestyle. It's a whole. It's 108 Pancharatric texts. You know, like the Ahur Budnya Samhita. I think that's one of the main ones that. Is used in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. The Hari Bhakti Vilas is a Pancharatric text. Yes, Prabhu? Oh, can you ask a question?
Yes. So, Vyasadeva, he divided the Vedas into four parts.
Yes.
Until then, there was just one version, just one big, long Veda.
This is the Veda.
There is some school of thought that Atharva Veda was done by somebody else. Especially for the Shudras. Have you heard anything like that?
No. Okay. But there's so many people say so many different things. Yeah. They say that the Bhagavatam was compiled after 1000 AD, or they say that, you know. There's, because the Atharva Veda is, like sometimes you read that there's three Vedas. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it says four Vedas. Call the Atharva Veda the cursing Veda. But the Atharva Veda is a very important Veda that has so many things. And another interesting point, that who will be the next Vyasadeva? Yeah. Who's going to be the next Vyasadeva? Do you know?
Can you mention some Purana?
Next Vyasadeva will be Ashvatthama. Yeah. In the Vishnu Purana it mentions in the next Mahayuga, Ashvatthama will be the next Vyasadeva. Even why? How is it? How is that possible? Even though he killed all the sons of Draupadi, did so many. How is that? Well, because even though he did that dastardly deed, he was punished, but he never gave up the process of purification. Okay. So he did some sin, but he never gave up the process of purification. So he will be the next Vyasadeva.
Parasara Rishi is the father of Vyasadeva.
Parasara Rishi, the grandson of Vasishtha Muni.
So is it every Chatur Yogi there is who was a different master?
Yeah. the different Vyasadevas and different. They appear at the end of Dwapara Yuga and the beginning of Kali Yuga.
Okay, but it's only Sri Krishna Dwapara who is in the Bhagavatam. It's only Sri Krishna
Dwapara. That's Vyasadeva.
Yeah, no, I know. But that's this one.
That's for this because basically Vyasadeva has compiled all the Vedic literature except Ramayana. All the Puranas, all the Mahapuranas, all the Upapuranas, different, you know, those type of literatures, the Smritis, but not the Dharma Shastras. Those were done by, there's 20 Dharma Shastras. The main ones which we follow are Manu, Parashara, and Yajnavalkya. Those are the three main ones which we follow. But there are others aside from that. You know.
What I was going to ask was, so this Bhagavatam, other Puranas, compiled by Sri Krishna Dwapara Yuga.
Yes.
But not every Chaturvedi is a new recompilation.
Yes. There would be.
Because the
Srimad Bhagavatam is all from different historical things from different yugas. It's not like you know, Herodotus or Arnold Toynbee's history of the British Empire, of the world, or something like that. It's like, you know, like when Narada Muni is speaking to Yudhisthira in the seventh canto, he says, "I'm now going to recite to you an ancient story," you know, or like in the eighth canto, is it eighth canto about or is it the sixth canto about the sixth canto speaking about Vritasura? That whole thing is mentioned in the Vedas. So he's just taking things. It's not the chronological order. It's historical incidences meant to illustrate a philosophical point.
But so I guess the confusion is, Srimad Bhagavatam specifically, is the dialogue between Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. So, but that doesn't happen in Chaturyugi. So I'm not sure I understand.
Well, in next Chaturyuga we can discuss that.
See you then.
We can discuss that point. We don't know what was the Srimad Bhagavatam from the last chapter.
We do know.
Yeah, they're coming and going. The Vedas are disappearing now. There used to be 1,000 shakas of the Rig Veda. Now there's a handful. Who knows, in 100 years, there'll be anybody who will be reciting the Vedas. There's fewer and fewer people. They're just because they're going to, you know, like I was in Srirangam and I wanted one friend of mine to recite something from the Samaveda. He said no. But then, just by happen, his next door neighbor walked in, and the guy was a gold medalist in Samaveda. So he began reciting Samaveda, go on, you know. But he's an older man. And now his sons don't want it. His sons want to get MBA. You know. They want to get MBA or this or that. So they're not learning these things.
Last question. Rudra Sampradaya
is
also called Vaishnava Sampradaya.
Yes.
But as I understand, because I think it is done in Kanchipuram and maybe in the same way, they worship Shiva, Lord Shiva. Right? Rudra Sampradaya. How do we call
it? No. You're talking about, there's a distinction here. The Rudra Sampradaya, the main acharya is Vishnu Swami, and the main proponents in the Rudra Sampradaya now are what would be known in Rajasthan and Gujarat as the Vallabhacharya. They're not Shaivites.
Not a Shaivite. Okay.
No. The Rudra Sampradaya doesn't mean Shaivites. You know, in very popular in Western India, the Vallabhacharya, Pushtimarg. So Sumati Murarji, who owns Sindhya Steamship Company, and who sponsored Srila Prabhupada to come on own the Jaladuta, she was from the Vallabha Sampradaya. In fact, she's on the board of directors of the temple, or Nataji. Where's that temple?
Shinatwar?
She was one of the on the board of directors there. Natwar. not the Dwar, and not G. So they're from the Rudra Sampradaya, but not, they're not Shaivites.
No, I understand the
difference. Yeah, it's a difference there.
So what's the reason for being called Rudra Sampradaya?
Because the student, main student is Shiva.
Oh,
see, so Krishna spoke to, you know, to Lakshmi Devi, spoke to Brahma, spoke to the Kumaras, and spoke to Lord Shiva. So then Shiva has a Vaishnava Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya. But there are also Shaivites who worship Shiva as God.
Okay.
They're mistaken.
Okay, makes it clear.
Yeah, it's not a, that, that's not his Sampradaya, that's their...
those who worship Shiva, so their Sampradaya.
Yeah, that's their own problem. That's their confusion. But he has a Sampradaya of Vaishnavism, because the as is explained in the Narada Pancharatra, the Narada Muni explains that the main function of Lord Shiva is to make sure that the worship of Vishnu takes place properly. That's the main function of... Anyway, I was told to end this class at 8:30, and it is now 9 o'clock. I'm going to get in trouble there. Now we're just talking, okay. Class is over, now we're just talking. Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.